Hello and welcome to the Youth Sport Trust podcast. Today's episode might sound a little bit different to normal. We're thrilled to be joined by Keith Daniel, who recently guest hosted the first in a series of roundtable discussions focusing on COVID-19 and the future of PE and sport. He's joined in this episode by Ali Oliver, Lisa Fathers and Liz Durden-Myers. Here's Keith to introduce the podcast.
Hello and welcome to this latest in the Youth Sport Trust podcast series. We're going to be talking over the next three podcasts, maybe longer if things stretch out, but planned for three podcasts on a particular issue, which is COVID-19, children's physical development and well-being, and the future of PE and sport. And this opening podcast, let me say straight away, was recorded before any announcement of the government's possible relaxation of the confinement rules. So we do need to put it in that context. But for today, we're going to be talking about what could be the possible scenarios for children's physical development, literacy, and overall well-being. And I'm delighted to say, remotely, we're joined by three experts. So let me bring them in straight away, and first of all, ask them to introduce themselves. So Liz Durden-Myers, perhaps you can just explain who you are and where you come from, first of all.
Hi, I'm Liz Durden-Myers. I'm the chair of the International Physical Literacy Association. I'm a previous PE teacher and now a teacher educator at Bath Spa University and the University of Gloucestershire, working with the next cohort of PGCE students who will be entering the profession, hopefully in September, as well equipped as possible. So that's my current position, and I'm based geographically in Bath.
Okay, thank you, Liz. And also with us is Lisa Fathers. Lisa.
Hi there. Yes, I'm Lisa Fathers, Director of Teaching, Skill and Partnerships at the Alliance for Learning. I'm also part of my Multi-Academy Trust executive team at Bright Futures Educational Trust. I'm also a National Trainer with Mental Health First Aid England as well, which I think is relevant today.
Lovely. And also with us is Ali Oliver. Ali.
Thanks, Keith. Hi, I'm Ali Oliver, Chief Executive of the Youth Sport Trust, and very excited to be contributing as a previous Head of Physical Education, but now passionate about the importance and place of PE and sport in young people's education, development and well-being.
Okay, let's start with a fairly general sort of overview of where we are, and particularly, I guess, what's been worrying you most about the impact of COVID-19 on young people, and it is young people, obviously, that we're looking at the focus on. Let's start with mental well-being, which, Lisa, is a question for you, I think. What's worrying you most on this issue?
Okay, well, first of all, I think we're all feeling quite dysregulated at the moment, and whether we feel it or not, we're all probably experiencing kind of waves of shock and uncertainty. And for some of us, that'll be unfamiliar and new. But for many children, actually, those feelings will be something that they have experienced before. So when I think about the thing that's worrying me the most, I guess it's the impact of the current situation on those children who have already experienced trauma before. Because for some people, it will be quite triggering. You know, in the news yesterday, we saw that there was some parents really struggling with their children that they've adopted. And for many children that have suffered before in this way in terms of previous trauma, I think that it's heightened. I guess the other thing that's really worrying me is the equity and the poverty at the moment that we're seeing in families, and how this current situation is affecting some families very differently than others.
Yeah, we'll come back and pick up those themes later. Liz, let me bring it across to you from that purely physical point of view and that physical literacy idea. What are your concerns?
I think I'm similar sort of point to Lisa in that the pandemic for me has highlighted accessibility inequalities in relation to places and spaces to be physically active in and around the home. So for example, those with access to a garden are likely to have a completely different experience to those who are potentially restricted to a flat or somewhere where they can't be physically active, adhering to social distancing guidelines. So I think the inequality situation has been exacerbated, and potentially previously in physical education, we provide an opportunity to kind of rebalance those inequalities. So that's a thing that's concerning me specifically. But I also think around in terms of the some children rely on specialist facilities and equipment and access to specialists in order to be physically active. So access to things like swimming pools or hydrotherapy pools are restricting some people's physical development. That's an issue that I'm concerned about. But primarily, my major issue or my major concern is that it's very much down to family circumstances. If you've got the individual family circumstances that allow you as a family or as individuals within a family to be physically active, you're more likely to be able to be physically active in this environment. However, if you've got not access to places and spaces to be physically active, or if your parents are juggling working commitments as well as trying to supervise their children, potentially physical activity is not going to be a priority for them at this time. Similarly, the pull for sedentary leisure time activities may be hindering physical development as well. So the opportunity to be physically active, the inaccessibility and the disparity between access to facilities and environments, but also personal and family circumstances will be dictating engagement in physical activity.
Now, I find that really interesting. Let me bring Ali in here, because everything you've said, both of you actually, Liz and Lisa, surely could also have been said before COVID-19 actually kicked in place. There was inequalities. People did have different kinds of spaces. There was different family commitment to actually try and encourage health and activity in young people. So Ali, has COVID just exacerbated this, or has it been a game changer?
Great question, Keith. I mean, you're dead right. I think it's done both, actually. So the fact that we already knew, if we're talking about children's physical activity levels, even before the pandemic, we know that around about 30% of children were doing less than 30 active minutes a day. So we knew we had a national issue around the percentage of children meeting the recommended daily amounts as prescribed by the chief medical officer. So what's happened, and we know this again through the statistics, for England have been producing, they've been taking a temperature gauge on the active behaviours of the nation. And what we're seeing now is 38% of children in the last 3 weeks have been less active at home than they were at school. So in that way, we've exacerbated a bad situation. But clearly, when children are at school, that, as Liz has already said, they have access on a weekly basis to physical education, and some of them, you know, daily access to enrichment programs, play times, access to equipment. And so what you're seeing is the impact of disadvantage, again, hitting those who need it the most are struggling to access it right at the most critical time.
Okay, let me ask, you'll probably tell me this is an idiot's question because you're the expert. So let me ask Lisa first, and then I'll come to you as well, Liz. But Lisa, we are several weeks into this. Sooner or later, things are going to start to edge back to some form of education. Do we actually know, either here or internationally, whether, and I don't mean to trivialise this, but whether it matters, whether it really will make a difference, or whether it's just a little passing phase that we can get over fairly swiftly?
I think that's a really good question, and I think the answer to it isn't a simple one. So first of all, I think, you know, just on a general level, there will be a lot of work to do to transition children back into what a school day normally looks and feels like, you know, and that's everybody. And I actually think that it will make a difference this time, it's particularly for those families where there might be domestic violence, where the children perhaps have suffered you know, trauma before, where attachments are not strong, so perhaps in you know, families that have only recently adopted, all those sorts of really kind of challenging environments will make this period harder, and there will be trauma again then from this period, if you like. But I think for everybody, you know, people will have been lonely. We're seeing lots of young people feeling like they're suffering from isolation. They're not seeing their friends. They're not talking to them. And it doesn't matter, you know, whether or not you can FaceTime somebody or not. That feeling of being in a community, a school community, and that sense of belonging, it feels very different. And I think it's the same for adults, actually. So I think it will matter. And also there will be a number of bereavements. You know, it's a sad fact that we will have a number of bereaved children, I'm sure. And so we need to think about how we're going to manage all those emotions that go alongside that, and perhaps potentially some bereaved staff as well. And I know we're talking about children and young people today, but actually it's all part of the same picture, isn't it?
So the school, we almost forget sometimes, easy to do, I guess, but the school actually is more than just a school. It's a focus for the community hub. And without that, we actually lose a lot of those little ripples that keep coming down, certainly from the mental side of things. Okay, Liz, from the physical side of things, same question, really. Kids have 6 weeks summer holidays in the summer. They get back to it after a couple of days. Why is this different?
I think that's a really good point to make, actually. And we have research on what happens to children's physical activity over the summer holidays. And we know that with the summer holidays comes less structured days, reduced engagement in formal activity. And this has a knock-on effect on engagement in physical activity. And we see that there is a decline over the summer holiday period. Then when they try and get back into a school routine, that can be a bit of a disruptive time trying to get back into new working routines when they've had so long off. So I think actually what we'll see is an exacerbated situation of the research we already have for the 6 week summer holiday, possibly magnified because we still don't have access to a wide variety of facilities. So that's a concern for me, that we have got some sort of indicative research to go on. We know typically when children are looked after at home, physical activity levels on the whole decline. So that's the situation that we're in, and that's possibly what we will see in the research. Similarly, the guidance so far in returning to school has been trying to maintain social isolation where possible in schools, which is a really challenging situation to be in, trying to keep children socially distant from one another. My concern is that so far the guidance has been maybe being taught by one teacher in one classroom in this phased return, and actually PE could be negatively affected in that kind of guidance, because physical activity and physical education could be part of the antidote in helping children become resilient in this time and give them the confidence and promote positive mental health and well-being. But obviously there are challenges to keeping children socially distant in a physical environment. And my concern will be that we will sit children down for 6 hours a day in specialist designed desks where they're not allowed to move for fear of coming into contact with one another. And again, actually, it could be more damaging going back to school than it could be staying at home or able to move freely and interact and be physically active. So that's one of my concerns in returning to school, is that physical education should be an integral aspect of what that return to school looks like in supporting their health and well-being, and again, reducing those inequalities. And then finally, like, I have got a colleague in the US who has started to investigate some of the impact of COVID-19 on people who engage in softball, but also just in the general public. And she's observed a negative emotional response. And I think this highlights how, for many, sport and physical activity is part of their identity. And when that's abruptly taken away from you due to the restrictions that are now in place, it can leave you a sense of loss and almost a bereavement of the person you were before this situation came in. So again, it's back to that notion around trauma. And the longer this goes on, the less engaged that you are in the things that you used to be in, potentially the more barriers towards motivation to return, confidence in returning, and your competence when you do actually return could all become barriers to participation when we start to re-engage in those sports that we're not able to engage in currently.
Okay, three distinct themes there. Lisa, you wanted to pick up on one of those.
Yeah, there's just one thing you said then about sense of loss, and the thing that I didn't mention, which I think is really important that we don't forget about, is that sense of loss and rite of passage of those year six students and of those children in year 11 who have been working hard for 5 years, you know, towards exams, to now suddenly not have those exams and not have that rite of passage. And I think we saw some wonderful work from our schools that put proms on at a minute's notice and did all sorts of leavers assemblies in those last few days in case schools don't go back. But they will be experiencing a heightened sense of loss, actually, because of that rite of passage being taken away from them.
Well, you picked up on something there about the kind of creative response that a lot of organisations, a lot of schools have had to try and make the best of it, really. And let me bring Ali in on this, because from the Joe Wicks phenomenon to people recording different videos, doing this and encouraging you to play football in a certain way or whatever, that's one of the positives, isn't it? That we have seen a wonderfully creative response across the piece.
Yes, absolutely. I think the coming together of the sporting landscape, both to make available as much content as is possible at this moment in time without barriers, has been huge. And the Youth Sport Trust kind of has entered into the spirit of that as much as possible with a whole heap of free at home learning resources. But what's also, I think, been quite significant is the shift in the sporting landscape around its view of technology in the digital space. And kind of we've been wrestling with it for a while, whether it's a detractor for physical activity or whether it's an enabler. And I guess what these sorts of environments and conditions do is they drive the most innovative responses. I think what we're starting to get to now is an understanding of how we can both use technology to enhance and add value and enable physical activity when it isn't possible to do it in its normal sort of context of human-to-human interaction. But also, at the same time, people have had such a belly full of technology that we also know, you know, a lot of the young people voice insight that we've been gathering is they now want to reconnect in a human way. You know, they are missing playing sport. They are missing socialising with their friends. So it's been great that we've seen innovation and development of online content. It could well help us find a more healthy balance between the digital engagement and human engagement. But at the same time, it could also help young people really think about what they've missed about being in human contact with each other rather than predominantly engaged through social media, etc.
Lisa, can I throw that partly onto you, which is that it seems to me, one of my daughters is a maths teacher, okay? It seems to me perfectly conceivable that you could teach maths in a way that preserves social distancing. Not ideal, but I can see how it can work. I struggle to see how you can possibly teach PE in a way which preserves social distancing. Maybe you can do it with skills at a primary school. I'm struggling to see how you could deliver it at a secondary school. But psychologically, does it matter that kids have contact, have interactions in that way, or could you actually see a way in which we can retain social distance without damaging young people's mental health?
I can't see any way that social distancing would work in any school, if I'm honest. I just can't see it because of the size of classrooms, the size of schools, young people and children themselves forgetting. You know, we have seen in supermarkets, people forget, don't you? You queue up, don't you, 2 meters away from everybody, and then you get inside and people are reaching for, you know, things right really close to you. And, you know, we've seen people yelling, "Get back," and things like that. So I just think the nature of children and young people are that they will forget, and it'll be very, very difficult. I think, like you say, it's easier in some lessons than others, but I think it depends on the nature of school buildings, space available. In the majority of schools that I'm in a lot, the classrooms are just simply not big enough to space everybody out 2 meters at a time. In terms of PE and you know, sports halls and things like that, I think there are some things that people can do, and I think that, you know, it would be a really good idea to do that. But equally, there are some sports that I can think of that will make it more difficult. For example, football, you know, tackling and things like that. I think that the impact on mental health is that it would be better for children to see each other even at a social distance than not see each other at all. But how that will work in practice in schools is a whole other podcast probably, and I don't think we should encourage schools to go back too early just because children are missing each other if we can't do it safely.
Okay, that's really interesting. So delay if we can't do it safely because actually the fact that kids want to mix with each other isn't sufficient reason to actually bring them back. That's really interesting. Okay, Ali, you were keen, yeah, to jump in there.
Well, I think this is a really, really important moment for us to consider the purpose, relevance and intent of physical education, both now even actually pre the pandemic, but absolutely now and kind of going forward. So I was really interested listening to that last discussion about social distancing. Can we do PE? We can't necessarily deliver physical education if what we're doing is teaching sport. And if we're trying to continue with competitive sport and sport as we might have, you know, previously imagined it, then no, but that isn't physical education. And, you know, what we have seen, coming back to your earlier point, Keith, is brilliant innovation in how young people can continue to develop their physical literacy, acquire a vast range of skills and movement competence and confidence on their own or with siblings or by doing things remotely. In secondary schools, when we hope, if we've done a good job, young people are on the journey to physical literacy and do have those fundamental skills, the question we have to be asking is, what is physical education for? And right now, I think it's a brilliant moment for us to create a bit of a step change in this subject, which could be fundamental for both children's health and well-being. It could be profound in terms of its impact on young people's learning and overall performance within education and schools. But significantly, it could make sense to all young people, even those who don't foresee a future for them playing sport. So now could be a brilliant moment, picking up on what Liz says, to really put physical education front and centre of a curriculum that's building recovery for young people, where we focus on wellness and sense of well-being. And then you kind of move into different activities which might some might have a particular slant on mental health, like yoga and Pilates, that, you know, we can do lots of running and cycling and work on ergometers, but we can also do a whole range of netball games, target games, athletic activities, gymnastic activities, which don't require any human in any physical interaction. So I don't want people to mislead this, and I'm saying let's not do invasion games, but let's think about, if we're going to do some invasion games, let's do them with a focus on how do we play games where we stay at a 2 meter distance and therefore help young people to remember, to pick up Lisa's point, what social distance feels like, and use physical education as part of that learning journey.
All right, Liz, you're a senior lecturer in physical education. Are we preparing, are we sophisticated, are we ready for our physical education teachers to go back and do what Ali has just said, or are we way behind the curve?
I think that's a really interesting point. I think the PE profession, if that one, hugely passionate, but also very creative. And I think for a lot of professionals out there, we've hit pause on what traditional PE or the PE world that we've left. Whether we re-enter the PE world that we left remains to be seen. But I do think that if we are going to be changing the picture of what PE looks like when we do eventually return, we need to be proactive in exploring that now and having these conversations. I completely agree with what Ali just said there. It's an opportunity for us to reconceptualise what PE is and what the intent is. And from my perspective, you know, that's promoting physical literacy, so broadening the range of sports and physical activities that we can encourage and nurture within PE environments, rather than the traditional approach to maybe focus on invasion game type activities. Although they are important and have a place, they only are part of a wider umbrella of physical activities that we can promote. I think what this situation has kind of shone a light on is that, as Joe Wicks saw when the first happened, he got us talking about in getting physical activity as part of our daily lives. And so far, a lot of the guidance has been around exercise and fitness-based activities. But again, that's only a very small part of the wider physical activity umbrella. So when we do go back, just like Ali said, incorporating a range of physical activities whilst remaining safe in the social distance and adhering to social distancing, but also being creative in how we can approach these physical activities, and also maybe putting a bit of a different spin on it and having a bit more of an emphasis of what you can do at home, because it may be that on this phased return, they may be in school for 1 or 2 days and then back at home again. But this is an opportunity for us to reconnect home life with school life and really reconceptualize what physical education is and prepare children for physical activity outside of school as well as inside school. So I definitely think that this is a real opportunity for us as a profession to reconceptualize what PE is to us and for our young children.
Can I ask a question that I mean, I was talking to Ali before we started recording this, and I'm again, it's probably one of those politically unacceptable questions. But let me ask, first of all, you, Liz, and then I'll come on to Lisa and put it to Ali as well. But you use the term here, opportunities to promote physical education, okay? And yet, if we follow some of what's being said about COVID-19, age may be an issue, but there's a lot of very healthy 70-year-olds plus who are still being told to isolate. Potentially, the research comes back and says the real issue, actually, the people who are actually suffering more than anyone are those who have underlying health conditions, yes, and people who are obese and people who haven't looked after themselves. Now, if we want to change that over the future, do we need to stop promoting and being nice and nudging people to do more and actually demand, require people to do more in the same way that kids have to learn how to read and write in schools? Do we actually need to say, when I was a kid, we had to do a 3-mile cross-country run? You couldn't not do it, you had to do it. And actually, personally, I quite enjoyed doing it. Should we be doing that? Should we say you must do this?
I think that's a really interesting question, but as you've mentioned, I think what this situation has done is kind of highlighted our own mortality. And as you say, those of us that have kept ourselves healthy and well are potentially lowering our risk of this virus. We've seen reports of people giving up smoking in response to this to better their chances and to help their health and well-being during this time. I agree. I think there's been a long, long time where we speak about how physical education has had a relative value for a long, long time, where it's important. Of course, we talk about health and well-being as integral, and children need to be healthy, fit and well in order to be able to learn. But often that comes at a relative value to achieving GCSE results or the core examination or SATs. And it's often something that's pushed down within the curriculum or not prioritised or given enough focus. So I definitely think the raising the value of PE, health and wellbeing, is definitely needed and essential to transforming the health and wellbeing of the nation and also increasing physical activity engagement more widely and broadly.
Enjoying the podcast? Then please text CHAMP to 700 85 to donate £3 and help ensure every child gets to experience the life-changing benefits that come from play and sport.
Do we still almost give people the opt-out card, you know, or do we actually require it because there is a bigger long-term win if we do require young people to be physically active, physically literate, and to put it bluntly, healthier? And we'll come on to the psychological implication of that in a moment. But Liz, from a teaching point of view, from putting people out there that are going to hopefully inspire kids, they join in with Joe Wicks, but I sense from all the research that not enough kids are doing enough sport. So,
yeah, I think my reaction to that is more done badly is as damaging, or more done negatively with a negative experience is as damaging as not doing anything. So what we should be encouraging is high quality, positive and meaningful experiences in physical activity that engender a disposition and a value and an affinity towards physical activity. We know if we talk to generations that were forced around there across country, that PE is a subject that dichotomizes opinions. They either hated it and loathed it and loathed their PE teacher, or they loved it. And I think that we will be going back to those sorts of times if we just said, no, everyone blanket, everyone will do this, and it's a must. It's about trying to promote positive values and behaviors towards physical activity. That's the only thing that's going to transcend education and for them to take back into their daily lives post-education, but also in home life. So positive, meaningful experiences, physical activity experiences is what we should be doing. So not just more, it's more and high quality experiences we should be after, and making sure that the delivery is as accessible as possible and inclusive as possible, so that we've got more people engaging in a variety of activities, not just the traditional things we would have seen in previous cultures and systems.
Okay, not making people do cross-country runs then, even though I did quite enjoy it. I understand completely. I was being slightly facetious, but Lisa, from the psychological point of view, from the mental health point of view?
Yeah, so I agree with Liz that, you know, forcing everybody to do stuff that they don't like, it isn't ideal. However, for me, it's bigger than PE. In fact, it's probably bigger than schools. I think it's about encouraging whole workplaces, whole schools to be more active and to build activity into everything, whether that's traveling to school, you know, traveling home from school. You know, we've seen the country really getting moving. And it's taken the government almost telling everybody to get exercising for an hour a day for some people to do more. And we know from the Active Life survey that there aren't enough children moving for the recommended amount every day. But I don't think it's about more PE. I think it's about finding creative ways for physical activity in other lessons, at break time, at lunchtime, before school, after school, you know, things like the Daily Mile. And there are lots of other things like that that encourage staff and children to move more and more regularly. But I also think that, you know, we need to, as a nation, to highlight the link between physical activity and mental health, physical activity and obesity, in a much more explicit way so that everybody gets it and it doesn't take an international crisis where we actually realise that had we been a bit more healthy and fit, that we would be more immune to viruses and things like that.
That's really interesting. That passionate call to action really is something that I think as we come towards the end of this podcast, we should just pick up on. Ali, can I bring you in there first of all? Because you've championed this idea that we need to take physical literacy much more seriously. And you said at the start that maybe this is the moment in time where it actually has an impact. Do you really think this could be a positive that comes out of this?
I believe it could be, but I've also read enough articles in the last few weeks to know that human beings are lazier, more myopic and self-centered than sometimes the forecasts anticipate that we might be. So I think what we have is a situation that we can lever to create positive change, or there is a risk that, you know, while the world won't ever return to what it was prior to COVID, human behaviour may return. So I think it is about taking this moment in time, and all of us, whether we're school leaders in Lisa's position, whether we've got the opportunity to influence future teachers or the overall focus of the physical education profession, or whether we're parents or whether we're policymakers, it's what do we want for the long term for this nation? And clearly we're going to suffer a whole heap of consequences, both health-wise, economically, educationally. There will be consequences of this period. And how do we kind of get the silver lining? And for me, you know, one of the reasons I was so excited to be able to get the Youth Sports Trust behind these podcasts is to start a national conversation about what do we want it to be, to hopefully motivate, inspire, and engage more people in a conversation, in a movement that leads us towards a brighter future, rather than we all slip back and we kind of return to where we are. And there's sort of no doubt that there are two big pieces here. One, if your question, your last question for Lisa and Liz, was rather focusing on what do we need to do in physical education to improve young people's fitness and health now. So yes, if we are more prescriptive and we demand young people to be active, we might impact more positively on their health and fitness now. We might have fit young people. Will they have the motivation and the love of movement and the choice of something that they want to do for the rest of their life? ? And that's where I'm sort of my little soapbox moment is, I think we have a moment in time to look at physical education and sport and say, what purpose do we want it to serve? We now have enough evidence to know it's not just about physical, social, emotional health. It is about cognitive performance. It is about community cohesion. It can play all of these roles, but we have to do it with intent. If that's what we want it to be, we have to go about this stuff intentionally. Otherwise, we kind of drift back into the norms of offering sport, and those who like sport get it, and those who don't. So really enjoyed the conversation, and great to have stimulated a bit more of a national conversation on this.
Liz, final word from you, and then I'll come back to Lisa as well. If there was one point that you could make to the government, to anybody listening, that one call to action, what would that be?
I think for me, it's we're in a situation where potentially the one thing getting people through this situation at the moment is that one opportunity to go out and be physically active. It gives them the sense of freedom and purpose. And essentially, we are designed to move. We're, you know, we are physical beings, and being physically active is part of who we are as humans, but also part of us being able to flourish as humans. And I think for a long time, we've neglected that sense of physical activity and health and well-being, and it's had that relative value. I think this is an opportunity to put physical health and well-being back front and centre, and have that part and transform our culture around incorporating daily physical activity into our lives for health and well-being, but also just for better sense of self and flourishing. And if we can get that as a population, where we start to value physical activity on a daily basis, then everything will follow on from there, from health and well-being to economic output to a more flourishing society. So yeah, basically putting physical activity back front and centre into promoting health and well-being.
Okay, and Lisa, a final word from you, that one inspirational call to action message that you could put out there?
Well, I think Liz has said it all, actually, and the only thing I want to add is that actually, if we think about mental health and well-being, and the very first solution that we come to on the list should be to move more. It should be physical activity before anything else, because we know it's really good for us. I think the other thing is that it's really good for families to do together. You know, all too often we don't see that. And actually, the one positive from this crisis has been that there have been more families out. You know, there are bikes been dusted off out of the garages. There have been, you know, families finding a bit of grass and having a family football game. There have been families walking and running. And, you know, I've never seen so many families out together. And I think that sense of family is really important, and actually moving together, you know, and maybe I make a new phrase up, the family that move together stay together. There you go.
Well, I like that. And the other thing, as well as seeing that sort of activity, I think, is the friendliness that we've seen from people. So when I'm out running, people now say hello, and I think that's lovely to see as well. Okay, Liz, Lisa, Ali, thank you very much for joining us in this special YST podcast. We will be picking up some of these themes as well in a second podcast, and hopefully that will be after we've heard some of the relaxation measures that the government will introduce. So in our second podcast, we'll be considering what will schools need to think about in the wake of COVID-19 and the contribution of PE and sport. But for now, thank you for listening.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, Acast, wherever it is that you find your podcasts. If you'd like to find out more about the Youth Sport Trust, please head over to our website, which you can find at www.youthsporttrust.org. For now, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Enjoying the podcast? Then please text CHAMP to 700 85 to donate £3 and help ensure every child gets to experience the life-changing benefits that come from play and sport.